This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasem.
You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I am Kerry Kasem, and today, Alan Gervie has taken the day off. I think this is the first time ever in the 7 years of our show. Who do we have filling in? Our wonderful producer, Genevieve Wong.
Hey, Genevieve, hey!
I can't believe this.
I know, I finally made it.
You did it. It's your time to shine.
It took an entire pandemic for me to back at work.
You know, but everybody's pretty much shown up every single week for this show, and it's been absolutely amazing, really, that we've all done this. We've all come together, and one of us is always in the studio, which is great. And you happen to be, you know, on the lead mic today. How's it feel?
It's very scary. I don't even know what to say.
A shout out to Alan, who's out there hopefully taking a much-needed vacation or rest or whatever you're doing. We miss you already. We love you. You're a wonderful leader, and we'll have you back next week. But today we have an absolutely amazing show for you, even though Alan is not here. We've got two terrific guests. We're going to just go right into this. Now, there's been a lot of news this week that the House of Representatives is set to take up legislation to remove statues from the Capitol depicting Confederates and other figures associated with promoting slavery or white supremacy. Is this the right call? Is this the wrong call?
Well, joining us today to give her thoughts is actress and activist Elizabeth Rogliani, who's going to come join us after the break.
Oh, okay. So that's fine. And we'll talk for a little bit about this. You know, there's been a lot of statues being taken down. Some have been taken down that I think maybe rightfully so, maybe. And some have been taken down where I'm scratching my head going, wait a second, Ulysses S. Grant, hold on, do you know the history behind the statue? Do you know the history behind this man? So there are certain, I guess, called for things that might be good, things that might not. I know that Elizabeth has been all over the news. She went viral with a video, which we will play a little bit for you. But, I've been hearing so many different from friends of mine, you know, whether you're Black, you're Asian, you're white, whatever it may be. You know, there's so many differing opinions on this. And some people who've come from communist countries have actually said, this is how it started. This is how they took our rights away. And Genevieve, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's tough. I obviously support free speech, but I do worry that, you know, even though I'm a person of color and, you know, I understand that some statues are, you know, tied to people who represent racist history. There is definitely a part of me that wants those statues to stay because I understand that they serve, they're historical reminders of, our country's past.
Yeah. Actually, we have Elizabeth on the phone right now. So I do want to let people listen to the video that went viral. And this is a video warning Americans that statue removal can be a very slippery slope. Take a listen to this.
I've already lived through this thing when I was living in Venezuela. Statues came down. Chavez didn't want that history displayed. And then he changed the street names. Then came the curriculum. You guys think it can happen to you? I've heard this so many times. But always be on guard. Never believe something can't happen to you. You need to guard your country and your society or it will be destroyed.
All right, Elizabeth, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
So, Yes, thank you so much. You know, you decided to do a TikTok video and it went viral. First of all, what was the impetus? Why did you do the video?
Honestly, at that point, I didn't really have many followers, so I just wanted to get my thoughts out there. I was frustrated by seeing the statues come down, and it wasn't just the Confederate statues. I knew that it wasn't going to be long before more statues were going to be attacked. In fact, I think that one of the first ones was Christopher Columbus, and that reminded me of what happened back home. And then I saw the vandalizing of founding fathers and whatnot. So I thought, you know, this really seems similar to what happened in Venezuela. And so I just wanted to say my opinion. I didn't really expect the video to go viral, but I guess it resonated with some people. I even got messages from people that had similar situations and saw similar patterns where they're from. I got messages from people that left China or their parents left China, people that left Cuba, people that left Hungary. So it was resonated with a lot of people because obviously we don't have the exact same government in Venezuela that you have in the United States. Cuba didn't have the exact same government that we had in Venezuela, but the patterns are there. And I felt that the intention was there to sort of kind of destroy the system that we have in the U.S. and then put in a new one, which is what we saw.
And what would you say, you know, for the people out there who don't know about Venezuelan history, can you tell me what years you were in Venezuela and what your upbringing in Venezuela was like?
Yeah, I was born in the early 90s, in 92, right after a coup attempt by Chavez. Hugo Chavez did a coup attempt in the democratically elected president in 92. And then he was elected in 98. He spent 2 years in prison and then he was pardoned. I remember how I sort of saw the landscape change in Venezuela. But the thing is there that we elected a person that even though he did a coup in 92, he was really championed by the media. The media really loved him. He was really charismatic. He said he was going to bring change. He said he wanted to help the poor. He wanted to stop inequality. He was very progressive, but also very level-headed. So a lot of people didn't see him as a threat. In fact, a lot of the higher members of society thought they could easily, you know, be part of this new government. They interviewed him in news channels and they asked him about what he thought about communism, socialism, and Fidel Castro. And he pretty much denounced Fidel Castro. He said he was not a socialist or a communist or any of that. But of course, obviously things changed when he got into power. And while he was into power for those first few years, he was mild, but he started taking away liberty slowly. So people wouldn't notice, right? So when we look back in hindsight, we think, how did we just let all this happen? You know, he dismantled our police, like in 2000. He put his own police in. He also changed the voting system, the way he put in machines. The manual voting system wasn't
now.
A thing anymore.
Yeah. This is what's happening in America. You know, they want to defund the police. Well, look what happened in Washington. Look what's happening in Chicago. You know, look what's going on in these democratic cities that want to do this. And then we're close to being on a full lockdown again in California. Why? You know, I think, and this is my opinion, part of it is so that we have to mail in our votes. And what happens when you do that? There can be a tremendous amount of fraud. You know, you coming from a country, a beautiful country that has just gone downhill because of this, mm-hmm. you have seen it firsthand.
Exactly. And for us, obviously, people think, you know, Venezuela is Venezuela now because people have become aware of what my country is now since it's been all over the news, but it wasn't always like this. And I've heard a lot of people say, you know, they let this happen to them. They voted this in. But the truth is, our fair elections were in 98. After that, there weren't any fair elections. He basically took over the National Electoral Council. He put his own people in. So, you have to be careful about this changing everything. And for us, this is way back in history, but we used to have something similar to the Electoral College, and they took that away in place for the popular vote, which seems, you know, a very democratic thing. But the problem is masses can be really manipulated in certain parts of society, and especially in the bigger cities. So I do fear for people coming in and changing these laws that could potentially mean power for one group of people, easier achieved for one group of people. I don't want
to... Absolutely. We have to, Elizabeth... I do understand. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask you about how you feel about the Black Lives Matter protests. I know you said some things about it, and I want to have your take on it. We've got to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Carrie Kasem along with Genevieve Wong. Woo! Alan Gervie is out today. It's Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
We are back. It's Gervie's Law. I'm Carrie Kasem. We have Genevieve Wong, our producer, filling in for our fearless leader, Alan Gervie, today. And we have activist Elizabeth Rogliani on the phone. Now, a few weeks ago, she went viral, warning Americans that statue removal is a slippery slope. And where we left off was, I wanted to ask you about your stance on Black Lives Matter, Elizabeth, and why you find it so disconcerting.
Well, you know, I used to not have a very strong opinion on Black Lives Matter. I remember I came to the U.S. in 2010, and I remember seeing their protests, but sort of staying away from all that because U.S. politics, I didn't understand the race relations in this country. I did think there was a lot of focus on people's skin color. That always bothered me, that there's this constant conversation of you're a white dude, you're a black dude, you're a this or that, and that always bothered me. But now seeing the Black Lives Matter protests and seeing the organization, I do have a problem because they're calling attention to themselves, and people that don't really understand the problem are throwing money at it. And when you go to their website, they had this whole idea of disrupting the Western prescribed family structure, and the founders have said that they're trained Marxists. One of their leaders went to Venezuela. She met with Nicolas Maduro and called and said Venezuela was a place with intelligent political discourse. She went to our National Electoral Council. She took pictures there with the vest of the National Electoral Council, saying that she was looking to see how they did voter ID in Venezuela. She loved it.
Wow.
Which I find funny how they want to take away the voting ID requirement here. So I don't.
Which could lead to more fraud.
Yeah. And then she also spoke in the National Assembly, called everyone in the opposition that they're trying to hold on to their colonizer privileges. So it all just seems like this person had a completely warped view of the world.
Are you saying that it's like a conspiracy? What are you saying?
What? I'm sorry?
Are you saying that it's like a political conspiracy, Black Lives Matter?
Oh, yeah, I do think it's 100% a political movement.
It's very frightful when you see, first of all, the anger, the ferociousness with which the protests were done. But then when you're giving money to the Black Lives Matter organization, I'm wondering why this money was supposed to go to help protesters out of jail, this money was supposed to help Black lives, but you're seeing it being funneled to politicians.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who gave to Black Lives Matter, when I said, look, it's going to the Democratic Party, whether you are Democrat or Republican or independent, it doesn't matter. These aren't going to Black lives. These are going to mostly white Democratic politicians. And some people said, what are you talking about? So it doesn't sound like they're very forthcoming with what's going on here.
Well, Elizabeth, what do you say to people who say that you're disregarding the struggle of Black Americans?
I say that I understand that the feeling of Black Lives Matter, I understand that. But the thing is, the logo of Black Lives Matter has already been co-opted by this organization, right? The Black Lives Matter idea logo is this organization. And when Black Lives Matter has so much focus on itself, people that don't really understand the history of the United States when it comes to race relations, and they want to help, what are they going to do? They donate money to the organizations that may not be doing what they think they're doing. And I have not seen one of the leaders of this organization condemn protesters, knock down statues of, for example, Frederick Douglass or Ulysses Grant, or vandalize any of the statues that had nothing to do with the Confederacy, then say defund the police. I mean, and also the people that got killed during the protest, that police officer, the retired police officer. Haven't come down.
You don't hear anything about the fact that there were, you know, Black police officers killed. There's no, what about those Black lives? You know, and what about the Black lives of the children that were lost in, you know, in all the Chicago, the tumultuous, what's going on there? You know, it's a travesty of all these kids that are dying, and not just kids. You know, it's all the people who have lost their lives in the cities that seem to have gone, you know, off in their own direction. There's a lot of crime. There's a lot of death. Why is this not being condemned? Why are people saying this has got to stop? And I feel like there's only one side saying that. And then if you say, oh, you know, this has got to stop, you're a racist, you're a xenophobe, you're this, you're that. It's been very frustrating to watch the news.
Do you think that there are any double standards that Americans are failing to see, Elizabeth?
Yeah. I think I'm very frustrated because I see my friends think it's acceptable to sort of make fun at people who are white. I know this sounds like, oh, you know, people who are white, they're fine, or men, including men, anyone that's white, they say, well, they've been privileged all their lives. It's fine to make fun of them. It's fine to insult them based on the fact that they're men or the fact that they have white skin. Like, you're overcorrecting to the point that if you keep demonizing these people, some of them might not jump on your side anymore, be clear. And it's very socially acceptable to have someone say this against white people or against men, but not so much if you go the other way.
And speaking of Nick Cannon, what are your thoughts on cancel culture and, you know, what he's going through and, you know, Barry Weiss resigning from the New York Times and all that?
I think to an extent, I'm fine with people deciding to tune out of someone that they disagree with. You know, that I'm not going to listen to this anymore, or I'm not going to buy from the store anymore. But from that to having politicians or celebrities telling their fans, listen, stop watching the show, stop buying this, boycott them, send letters, that's when I have a problem with it.
Yeah, I have a problem with it too. Have you had a problem with haters? You know, anybody who speaks out or gives their truth usually has that.
Yeah, I definitely did have a problem with quite a few people messaging me. People that message me with the randomest things that have nothing to do with what I talked about. People that asked me if I was that I agreed with what was going on in Yemen. That was not my topic at all. Basically, it's like, if you disagree with something, you basically agree with everything else or you disagree with everything else. It doesn't work like that. You can disagree with one thing and agree with another a group of people are doing.
What about your friends? Like, are you...
I had one. Well, to be honest, my close friends, they're fine, except I've sort of had a falling out with one of them. Not specifically to do with politics, but I think it was a factor. Someone that I knew, though, she basically unfriended me and unfollowed me from all my social media channels. But then she went onto her Twitter with a bunch of my photos and started saying that I was milking the Venezuelan situation, that I was doing this, that I was privileged and this and that, and that she went to college with me. And I barely knew this girl. You know, I may have met her through friends and whatnot, but I wasn't close with her. And for her to assume that she knew everything about my life and start saying that I was milking the situation, I thought it was ridiculous. Of course, I retweeted her.
Good for you.
And said that you went to the same school as me. How can you say that I'm this privileged person while you're basically the same, except we have different political views? And I never did something like that to her, even though she was very opposite in her views to me. And I knew that. She posted about it constantly, but I never said anything.
Were you surprised?
Well, if you don't have haters, you're doing something wrong. You know, and when you have haters, you know you're getting out there. You know that you're being heard. You know,
exactly.
That's the one good thing. Is there anything you want to clarify? Like maybe, you know, sometimes I don't like to put out there, like, if there's bad gossip or lies about you, don't put that out there. But if there's something you want to say about yourself or clarify about yourself, please, you know, use this time and do so, because a lot of things, you know, are said about people who come out and tell the truth.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's this misconception that I'm trying to lecture people. I'm not trying to lecture people. I wanted to just, you know, speak from where I'm coming from, my opinion. And it obviously got to the point that people resonated with it and thought I was sharing something that they wanted to hear. I didn't necessarily want to lecture the American public on their politics, nor tell them, you know, this is what you have to do. But listen, this is where I'm coming from. And also, what was the other thing?
It's okay. It happens to the best of us. I did have a question for you. I mean, I know that you're an actress. Do you feel like your representation or your career is being impacted by what you did?
I think it might be. Honestly, I stepped away from it because of coronavirus. I haven't done anything. I was very much in the very early stage of this. And I know that a lot of people that are in the industry early on, because I know a lot of starting out actors, some of them are conservative and some of them have different political views that you see in TV or, you know, the celebrities. And they tell me that they keep quiet on purpose because otherwise they know they won't have a career. And that really bothers me, because for me, it's really important to be able to speak my mind. So I thought, you know what, if this happens, it's fine. It wasn't for me. But at the same time, I do think that industry has to change and become open to people with different opinions.
We totally agree with you. And where can people find you? We have about 20 seconds left in the segment. So where can people find you?
So I have my Twitter. That's where I'm more political. But I do have also my Instagram. I'm Elizabeth Rogliani in both. The handle is ELILANDIA_. I hope that's clear.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Elizabeth Rogliani.
Thank you.
And I've already followed you. So thank you for spreading your truth. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, one of my most favorite guests.
She's totally my women's crush Wednesday,
yes.
Even though it's Sunday.
Gloria Allred will be joining Gervie's Law in just a few minutes. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law. I'm Carrie Kasem, filling in for Alan Gervie today. Genevieve Wong, our esteemed producer. And very excited for the next half of this show, because one of my most favorite guests is on.
That was a great music choice, by the way.
It was.
Huge.
Thank you, Eamon. Thank you.
Well, our next guest is one who requires no introduction at all, mostly because she's been on the show like tons of times, right? And she's a huge household name. She's a women's rights attorney who has taken on scores of high-profile and even controversial cases.
Yep, and this week she's been in the news for Jeffrey Epstein, the American financier who was arrested last summer on charges of sex trafficking and conspiracy to engage in sex trafficking. He died by suicide. Some people say he got suicided. But we're now going to talk about his longtime companion, Ghislaine Maxwell, and the part she played in all of this. Now, she was arrested this last month. We would just want to welcome to the show Gloria Allred.
Hey.
Hey, hi. How are you doing, Carrie? And how are you, Genevieve?
Just hanging on.
We're good. We're glad that you're on. I mean, that just made us both extremely happy.
You're on and we can be together. So that's three strong.
There you go.
It's like old times at the courthouse.
There you go. There you go. Oh, so Jeffrey Epstein, I mean, you're the attorney for 18, if that's right, 18 accusers. And I just want to know the reaction to the news that Ghislaine Maxwell was arrested.
Right. She was arrested. And then this week there was her arraignment in New York and also her bail hearing. As to the arraignment, she pled not guilty. She's accused of recruiting and abusing and sex trafficking, conspiring to sex traffic underage girls to Jeffrey Epstein. And in addition, she is accused of perjury in a deposition that she gave under oath in a civil lawsuit where she was being sued for defamation. So these are serious felony charges, sex trafficking of underage girls. I do represent at least three of the, actually it's now 18 accusers that I represent.
Okay.
We have filed lawsuits and we've been litigating in New York for underage girls who were sex trafficked to Jeffrey Epstein. And so in any event, there was a bail hearing. Of course, this is a shock to her to suddenly be arrested at her New Hampshire home and then transported down to New York to the Metropolitan Detention Center. I'm sure she was hoping to be released on bail. That's what her defense attorneys argued, that she should be released, that there could be strict bail conditions. But after a lengthy hearing in which the prosecution argued that, no, she should continue to be held in custody and be detained in New York, the court denied her motion to be released on bail. Now, she's going to have to be there for at least another year in jail because her trial is not set until July 2021. And so that's going to be quite an experience for her unless she enters a plea. And, of course, it takes two to tango. It takes two to have a plea. We don't know if the prosecutors would offer her a plea. And in exchange for that, of course, she would have to answer questions, tell the truth about everything she knows, whether she's willing to do that or whether she wants to take her chances at trial. We'll have to wait and see.
We don't even know
if they'd want to offer her a plea.
I'm so curious.
Right.
I read in the New York Times that Maxwell tried to flee from the FBI when they arrived in New Hampshire to get her.
Well, that's what they said. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. That, of course, whether a person is a flight risk is a consideration that the court has to consider in a motion for bail, because the court wants the defendant to appear for trial. It's particularly important because Jeffrey Epstein was held in custody, but then he mysteriously died. Whether it was suicide or homicide, we don't know.
Right.
That was a shock to the many victims of Jeffrey Epstein and a disappointment. And so he never then stood trial. He never, I saw him when he was arraigned in New York. That's the last time. And then, of course, there are people who have been indicted for allegedly falsifying their records and not checking in on them in his jail cell when they should have. But the reason I mentioned that is because we certainly, if she's going to be in custody, which she is, we want to be sure that she is monitored, kept safe,
yes,
and, is available to appear at trial and doesn't meet the same fate as Jeffrey Epstein.
I'm just curious, because we're all women and she's a woman. What do your clients say is her, what's her psychology like? What type of a person is she?
Well, I mean, it isn't, there are there are victims who accuse her of not only abusing, in some cases, them, but, you know, recruiting them. Obviously, Jeffrey Epstein could not have sexually abused the number of victims that he has allegedly abused alone. Somebody had to get these underage girls and some, in some cases, adult women to him. You know, the idea was that they would be massaging him, but then often it led to, you know, a sexual assault of some nature, a rape, or, you know, that she was, you know, the victim was forced to perform sexual acts on him. So, you know, he didn't go out and get these women in most cases, that, you know, he had others do it for him. And so we'll see, by the way, Ms. Maxwell may not be the only one who ends up being indicted. There may be others. So she may be the first that, you know, is kept in custody, in, you know, after Jeffrey Epstein on this matter, but she may not be the last.
Are you scared for her life? Because there are people that are linked to her and to Epstein that are, you know, I mean, presidents that are, you know, we're looking at Prince Andrew, the Duke of York. There's some big players here. Could,
I hope that the correctional, you know, system, that the Metropolitan Detention Center has learned its lesson in failing to, you know, and every facility in New York has learned its lesson that it really has to do its job to monitor prisoners, especially high-profile prisoners, to make sure that they're kept safe while they're in custody. Yeah. That's their duty. So, you know, there are powerful men that, I mean, Ms. Maxwell, you have a point. She was living with Jeffrey Epstein for many years. She was, by her own admission, intimate with him. She worked for him. She traveled with him to all of his properties in New Mexico, the ranch, Manhattan, his townhouse, you know, to Florida, to Little St. James Island, where he had property, and partied with him, and also Prince Andrew at her home in London. So she knows a lot of the powerful men who came to those parties. She knows quite a bit about, you know, who did what to whom and how often, so to speak, who was victimized.
Right. And let's talk about...
Are there photos? Are there videos of sexual abuse? You know, we'll have to wait and see what she has. And if she wants to make a deal with the prosecutors, you know, she's going to have to give them things that they don't already have. But let's keep in mind, there was a search warrant that was executed even before Ms. Maxwell was arrested. Of Jeffrey Epstein, in Jeffrey Epstein's various properties. So, you know, quite a bit was seized, and we'll have to see whether any of it involves her, any of it involves rich, powerful, famous men.
And speaking of rich, powerful, famous men, Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, you know, he's obviously linked to Epstein. He's been accused of sexual misconduct. What does Prince Andrew know? And why is it important for him to speak?
You know what, that we'd like to know, and I've been basically, you know, urging Prince Andrew to speak to the FBI. In December, I sent a letter to his home in England. I proved that it was delivered. And I called on him on behalf of the victims that I represent, you know, speak to the FBI, answer all their questions truthfully and fully.
Right.
I mean, many of my clients have spoken to the FBI. They're victims. They were happy to do so. They want justice. They want truth. They want transparency. They want to do their part. But Prince Andrew, you know, dragging his feet, he didn't answer that. And then in January, the then U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, Jeffrey Berman, stood outside Mr. Epstein's home in New York, and again, publicly asked Prince Andrew to speak to the FBI. He didn't. And then I hired a school bus, and I got with a large poster of Prince Andrew on it.
Yep.
His face.
We saw it in the tabloids.
Yeah,
yes,
and then I said, if you see this man, please ask him to call the FBI. And then I put the phone number of the FBI on the poster on the school bus and had it driven around Buckingham Palace and elsewhere in London, and still Prince Andrew didn't speak to the FBI. Then just recently, the new acting U.S. attorney for New York also called on Prince Andrew to speak. Now, his attorney to the FBI, his attorneys are saying, well, he's been trying to contact them. He's not getting a response. That's so patently absurd. It's really hard for me to believe that, you know, that they're not in contact with him. Maybe they're saying he'll speak to them. This is just guessing, speculation on my part, that he'll answer written questions. And maybe what they want is more likely to have him come in, and they could interview him in London as well and answer questions in person, which he may be or appears unlikely or very reluctant to do.
Well, who knows? He could have been busy with his daughter's wedding.
I don't know what he's waiting for. Is he waiting for the gold-plated invitation delivered on a silver platter? Because, you know, he should do it.
Innocent people don't act this way. They just don't. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about, you know, I know that Princess Beatrice got married, and we don't see him in any of the photos. And I wanted to ask you why you think that is. Okay. We'll take a quick break. This is Gervie's Law. We are talking to Gloria Allred. I'm Carrie Kasem. I'm here with Genevieve Wong. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KVC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
It's Gervie's Law. I'm Carrie Kasem. I'm here with our producer, Genevieve Wong, because Alan Gervie took the day off. And we're here with Gloria Allred, the magnificent Gloria Allred, a friend of the show. And right before the break, we were talking about Prince Andrew. And I asked you about Princess Beatrice. Now, she got married this week, and Prince Andrew did walk her down the aisle. But Genevieve and I were looking. We haven't seen any pictures of him.
Buckingham Palace refused to release pictures of, him and the family, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I wonder why not.
That's what we want to ask you, Gloria.
Yeah, you know, I guess he's trying not to become the focus of attention while his daughter is being married. There's a lot of discussion about the fact that she's wearing the wedding dress that Queen Elizabeth wore. You know, where's Andrew? It's like we've got to put it under the heading, where in the world is Prince Andrew? He apparently was there, but no photos of him. Any event, look, Prince Andrew, you know, he should stop dragging his feet. For me, this is all about the victims. It's not about Prince Andrew. He has serious allegations against him. I'm not going to say whether he's guilty or not, but all I can say is he sat for an hour for an interview with the BBC on television. Most people think it was a disaster. Of course, there's no duty to tell the truth if you're on television, although it'd be nice if he did, and maybe he did, maybe he didn't. You do have a duty to tell the truth.
Yeah.
So he appears reluctant to do that, even though he did a television interview. So why, I don't know. As to the victims, they're getting some form of justice. It's not enough justice because I'm representing many victims in a claims process that has been set up for them. It's funded by the estate of Jeffrey Epstein. And they can confidentially, you know, we are representing many of these victims, well, actually all of them that we're representing confidentially in the claims process. And then they're eligible to potentially get an award from the claims administrators. And so that process is now open to them. And that's good because the funds from Jeffrey Epstein's estate, if they can prove they were victims, and we think we have strong arguments for them, then they should be able to recover damages for their pain and suffering, their lost wages, their therapy bills, their medical bills. And so that's one form of justice. But, of course, we want there to be, you know, accountability in the criminal justice system as well for anyone that the prosecutors can prove victimized women beyond a reasonable doubt.
And
are you finding more women? Sorry, Genevieve.
No, sorry.
Are you finding more women coming forward than previously have? I read the book that came out. We saw the documentary. Good. So there are more people coming out that we don't know about yet.
Yes, and more and more have come forward to me from, you know, different parts of the world, frankly. Some of them even from the UK who've never contacted a lawyer before have not spoken to the FBI, and yet were victims. And, you know, it's often the case that victims will blame themselves or feel ashamed or feel like they should have known better, or, you know, that's exactly what predators want, is for the victims to feel so ashamed that they'll never come forward, never do anything about it. But now they're understanding it wasn't their fault. They were taken advantage of. They were targeted as being vulnerable, which they were, and then they were manipulated and you know, forced to do things that, you know, today they say, oh my God, how could that have happened? It wasn't their fault. That's the point. So, you know, it may be that some more of my clients will be speaking to law enforcement. That's their choice. We don't force anybody to do that. It's up to them. But I'm glad at least they're coming forward to be able to be compensated, you know, in the claims process.
So what happens next, Gloria, and what sort of goals do you want to achieve?
What happens next is we'll have to wait and see. There's going to be a lot of discovery going on and motions in reference to the criminal case. You know, the defense, I'm sure, will be making motions saying that these allegations against Ms. Maxwell, that they should be dismissed because it was a non-prosecution agreement. When Jeffrey Epstein pled guilty in 2008 in Florida, that they wouldn't prosecute others that might have been involved with him. I think it's highly likely that she'll lose on that motion, but that's a motion they'll bring. And then there'll be, you know, motion statute of limitations that it's too late because these allegations are from 94 to 97. What are chances of succeeding on that? Probably not good, but we'll have to see what the court does. And then there'll be a lot of discovery, thousands and thousands of pages of evidence. And we'll see what happens with this case and anything else. Yeah. But, you know, the point is, for so many years, victims have been denied justice, and it's time for them to get as much justice as is still available to them, both in the criminal and the civil system.
Now,
you know,
by the way,
there was also the Weinstein case was in the news, too, this week.
So that was my next question after I'm going to ask you this one. Would your clients be okay if Ghislaine Maxwell, the madam, well, the accused madam, would they be okay if she got off but got everybody else busted or gave all the tapes or the names or whatever she may have? Would they be okay with that, or do they want to see her go down as well?
You know, I don't know. That's not a question I've asked, and because I think we're taking this step by step, and we'll see what happens on this case. But in reference to the Weinstein case, that was in the news, of course, this week, too, because there was a proposed class action settlement for victims of Harvey Weinstein. Of course, you know I represent three victims in the criminal case in New York. I also represent one of the victims in the L.A. case that will be, you know, going to trial, or let's put it this way, hopefully at some point soon, Weinstein will be extradited to Los Angeles for the Los Angeles case that to proceed. But this was a proposed class action settlement. Now, I've been saying for a number of years that I don't think this is a class action properly, could be certified as a class action. And as a matter of fact, the proposed settlement, the court dismissed it and said that also the court didn't think it was the proper case for a class action. There were a lot of victims objecting to the settlement. We also objected. We represent Mimi Haley, who, of course, was one of the two victims for whom charges were filed, and Mr. Weinstein was convicted of sexual assault against her in New York, and he was sentenced to 20 years just on her charge. So she was one of the, you know, we objected on her behalf. And all I can say is, so now the cases will, many cases will have to be litigated against Harvey Weinstein and anyone else who might have been enablers or, you know, might be legally liable. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. That's on the civil side. But on the criminal side, of course, we'll see when Mr. Weinstein is returned to Los Angeles.
And when do you think that will be? When do you think they will? Is there any indication of that, when that may happen?
You know, I don't know, and I'm going to say my guess is, just a guess, probably not till the fall, because, you know, now because of COVID-19, our courts are slowing down here, and I have been slowed down, and there are just a lot of issues in New York as well. So we'll see what happens, but the good thing is he's in custody. He's not going anywhere. And he will have to come back to Los Angeles and face criminal charges here, even though he's sentenced to 23 years in New York. So we're, by the way, during COVID-19, I'm still getting a lot of calls from rape victims and victims of child sexual abuse and sexual harassment. So it's amazing what's still going on during COVID-19. You don't hear much about it. But it's still happening, but the good news is that women and victims are feeling empowered, and they decide they want to do something about it. And just because of COVID-19 doesn't mean they're going to stop asserting their rights to have justice, which is great.
And I've heard it's worse, you know, especially with, unfortunately, domestic violence and child abuse. It's gotten worse, including the suicides. It's how horrible it's been for people who've, you know, who are in abusive households. And
well,
how
Carrie, that's
school,
a really good point, because the slogan often is safer at home, but it isn't safer at home for victims of violence.
That's right.
You know,
that's
domestic
right.
violence. It isn't safer at home for victims of child sexual abuse. And matter of fact, it's more dangerous at home, but they don't really have an alternative. And for many of them, they've lost their jobs, and they become economic captives, which they might have been before, but it's even worse now. And then the husbands or significant others who've lost their job, their home, often, and, you know, they're just kind of taking out their anger about the whole COVID-19 losing their jobs on their wives or significant others. And it's just really dangerous out there for women.
Yeah, it's horrible. And children as well going to school. There's mandated reporters. If there's bruises, if there's kids that come in, you know, looking like they've been abused, they have to say something. There's none of that. Nobody's they can't see it.
Well, it's going to be online in the fall, apparently, for most schools.
Yeah, you can't see much
in
online,
California,
though.
So nobody's going to see it. It's going to be online. And there are a lot of kids that even if they have computers, they're not necessarily present or paying attention online to their teachers. And then they're home, and a lot of them getting stir crazy. And these are really, really challenging times, and it's especially difficult for victims.
Well, how are you doing during the pandemic?
Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. I'm operating from home, all my offices, but we are still taking cases. We're still litigating cases. We're still doing a lot of confidential settlements. We're doing them on Zoom with mediators and clients in different parts of the country, as well as here. We're settling cases. And so we're very, very busy, and nothing's changed except that I'm not physically in my office. I'm doing everything else, interviewing new clients, everything else from
that's wonderful. We have about 15 seconds. I just want to thank you so much. I'm so glad everything is good for you. I'm so glad you're taking on these cases. You're one in a million. You're an amazing woman, and it's just so wonderful to get to talk to you and have you on the show again.
Well,
thank you
so much. My pleasure. Keep up the great work that you do, Carrie.
Oh,
and Genevieve
thank you so
is
much.
A terrific producer. She's very persistent.
She's awesome.
I love that, and I admire that in any person, especially women.
Bye, Gloria.
It's been Gervie's Law. Alan Gervie, we'll see you next week. I'm Carrie Kasem along with Genevieve Wong. It's Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.